Taped from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out over Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
And I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
And today, we are continuing on with our summer blockbuster series.
Summer blockbuster.
Summer blockbuster. Talking all about the movies that have spun off from Saturday Night Live with SNL sketches. And this week we are doing the big hit movie, Wayne's World.
The big kahuna right here.
Hit a 92.
Yes, Wayne's World came out Valentine's Day, February 14th, 1992.
That is correct.
It is weird now, like, that I see this, how the first movie, the first SNL movie was The Blues Brothers.
And then in 1980, yeah.
And they didn't make another SNL movie until 1992.
Yeah, and that's...
What up with that?
That's surprising, especially considering that Blues Brothers was rather successful.
Yeah.
I think, you know, maybe part of that was because Lorne Michaels was away from the show for 5 years.
Huh, yeah, that makes
sense. I don't think he was involved with the Blues Brothers movie either.
Oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
So... And then, you know, so he came back to the show in like 85 and then kind of took a couple years to get his groove back, get the
right
cast going.
I guess so. But it is weird that like 92 was the next SNL movie. And considering if you look at all the other SNL movies, like they all came out in the 90s for the most part.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Once the 90s hit, it was just SNL movie after SNL movie after SNL movie.
Well, when I was researching this movie, I was reminded, I rewatched like some of the trailers for the various movies, and I was reminded... something I'd forgotten. They actually formed a studio for like SNL studios to produce the movies.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. I remember
so,
that.
So they set up the whole machinery,
yeah,
in place, and that I think that was largely due to the success of this movie.
This movie was a huge hit. It had a budget of $20 million.
Mm-hmm.
USA gross $121 million. Worldwide gross $183 million, and that, my good friends, is a hit.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of cash.
That's let me do the math on that. Boop, 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 boop.
Oh.
That is a lot of money.
The calculator just says in words, a lot of money.
Yep.
That's science right there.
Mhm. Mm-hmm.
So I mean, where were you when this movie came out? 92 February, do you remember?
February of 92. I remember very well because I was actually spending a semester abroad.
Whoa, traveling.
I was in England.
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 Wow. What were you doing in England?
I was in my sophomore year of college. I was spending it in Grantham, England. My college, University of Evansville, had a sister campus over in Grantham called Harlaxton.
Okay.
And because this was still at a time when they staggered the releases between the U.S. and overseas more, I didn't see it. It wasn't out in England yet.
Oh.
So I didn't see it until I got back to the States. And I don't know if I ever saw it in the theaters. I probably didn't see it until it hit videotape.
Oh, man. That must have been like a good year afterwards. Something like that. Because like, that's when videotapes, when a movie came out on video, wasn't until to like a year or so.
It could have been. I remember that changed a bit with the first Batman movie.
The
Tim Burton, Michael Keaton one. Because that one was out in June and that was out on videotape by Christmas. And that was like...
Oh.
A quick turnaround by then. So, yeah, Wayne's World might have been out a little faster by the end of the year. I think I saw it in 92.
Okay.
Maybe I saw it when it came to our campus.
Ooh.
Wow,
fancy times.
Maybe. What about you?
So I saw it, I was, what? So 92, February, I was 14. I was a month away from turning 15. And I feel like this movie was really geared towards my age group. Because, like, upon second viewing, I mean, it's still a good movie. I still like it, but it's definitely, like... geared more towards, like, you know, teenagers and preteens, like some of the humor. Like.
Yeah, I think 14's a good age for
yeah.
it. I think it would really hit you or really speak to you at 14.
Yeah, because, like, that's when, like, just saying the word schwing was enough to make you laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was a height of comedy.
Schwing doesn't still make you laugh?
Not as much. It takes a little bit more time.
What if they say schwing and then they do that little pelvic motion?
Where they okay, go, all right, there it is.
And then, yeah, schwing, like they have an erection and they're trying to disguise it.
He's talking about their peepees.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay. All right, there it goes. It's
yeah, okay. See, humor.
Yeah, it's theater of the mind.
Do remember there was one girl in my college who, she picked up on another Wayne's World catchphrase, the not.
Yeah.
And she would constantly say, not.
Yeah,
and people, that gets old really fast.
People, this whole movie is full of just so many catchphrases. The whole, I mean, my God, yeah. But not. I remember people saying a lot in, and like in what was that? So junior high, high school. I was a lot of people were saying not,
yeah.
and
yeah,
It was just like, can you please not say that anymore?
Can you not? But yeah, Wayne's World, I mean, it really became a huge sketch. We've talked about it on the show before, where it was one of those sketches in what we call 10 to 1 land, where it was the last sketch of the night, and it debuted there. And this was, Wayne Campbell was a character that Mike Myers had done back in Canada.
Right.
He did it in Second City, and he'd been doing it since he was a kid, like about 11 or something.
Wow.
And so this was a character he brought to SNL with him.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he pitched it as a sketch, they brought in Dana Carvey as his sidekick, Garth.
Because, right. Carvey was the bigger star. So they were like, well, no one really knows who you are, Mike. So we're going to pair you up with Dana.
Yeah. And I think it was very early in Mike Myers' tenure, because they did the first sketch in February of 89, I was reading, then 3 years later, there's a big movie about it.
Yeah, that says a lot.
Yeah, so the first time they did the sketch, it went well. They moved it up in the show. They did like 19 total Wayne's World sketches.
Wow.
I was reading. That's a lot.
That's a lot.
I mean, but it was very, very popular. Do you have a favorite of the Wayne's World sketches?
Wayne's World sketch? I mean, how could you not think of the Aerosmith Tom Hanks episode?
Sibilance.
That was pretty tight.
And a lot of girls would rather hook up with a roadie than the band.
Yeah, right. And that was a good one. And there was another one where I think it was John Goodman was on, and he was a cop, and he was talking about what's it called? Talking about drunk driving safety speech he was giving.
I vaguely remember.
And then Wayne and Garth were like reenacting it behind the couch.
Oh yeah, okay.
It's
okay.
Oh, I'm not drunk, and they were doing I remember that being kind of cool. There's just something about the energy of these sketches. It has like a very young, youthful energy that like a lot of people gravitated
to. Yeah, I mean, it's so low budget. It's very ramshackle. Because they're doing a cable access show.
Yeah.
So that they turned that into an asset.
Yeah, and it's very has a lot of charm to it, and it's a lot of, like I said, youth and energy to it. And people just loved that and gravitated towards it, and became like one of the biggest deals in SNL history.
And the dynamic between the characters of Wayne and Garth, it's very engaging. They're a good comic duo.
Yeah, very much so.
And this movie is interesting in that it takes the characters and, of course, expands their world.
Yeah.
We venture outside the basement.
Yes.
So let me give a little quick plot summary in case folks don't remember, if you haven't seen this movie in 27 years.
Yeah, I don't see how you could not.
So we have, let's see, I'm reading from the back of the DVD case right now.
DVD case?
Yes.
Yes.
When a sleazy TV exec, Rob Lowe, offers Wayne and Garth a fat contract to tape their late night cable access show at his network, the two can't believe their good fortune. No way. Way. But they soon discover that the road from basement to big time is a gnarly one, fraught with danger, temptation, and raging party... What is this word? Opportunities.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, it's very small type. Can Wayne win the affection of rock goddess Cassandra, Tia Carrere? Will Garth get dunked by his dream girl at the donut shop, Donna Dixon? Serious questions, dude, and there's only one way to find out. Watch Wayne's World.
Yeah.
I watched this on DVD. I got the DVD from my local library, and I got to say, the menu screen is one of the more clever menu screens I've seen. Have you seen this movie on DVD?
No, I mean, I have it on DVD, but I have the double feature where it's Wayne's World and Wayne's World 2.
Economical.
Which we'll be talking about later
on. Oh, very nice, very nice.
But yeah, it was just like a regular press play scene setup.
Oh, okay. On this one, the menu screen, they made it look like a cable listing chart.
Ooh.
Which was very cool. So you could do the movie, and then there was like another show that's marked special features and some things that say off air.
That's pretty
neat. Yeah, and they had a couple random things. They had like one listing for the Brady Bunch. And you click on that, and it's just literally a scene from the Brady Bunch, which, of course, also owned by Paramount, who produced this movie.
Oh, far out. That's one of the things I kind of miss about like DVDs, especially like special feature DVDs and Criterion, like the menu, because you have all these kind of cool little things about it, and like the way they set up the menu is usually pretty creative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and, like sometimes, like depending on the DVD you have, they'll have like a hidden feature, like you got to click on
Easter eggs.
Easter egg, yeah, click on a certain thing, and like it leads you into this whole other.
yeah,
that cave of
little unmarked extra.
Yes, of
yeah, that was always fun. I always enjoyed those.
I always dug those.
So, but yeah, so kudos to Wayne's World menu designer.
Yes,
on the DVD,
we salute you.
You did a nice job.
Yes, absolutely. So, I don't know. I mean, as far as this movie goes, I mean, what were your thoughts when you like? Was it any different from when you first saw it than when you recently seen?
I haven't seen it in probably a good decade or more. That was a motorcycle that just went by. That's if you right. didn't hear that,
yeah, I wasn't making a getaway. I'm out of here.
I remember at the time thinking, this is a funny movie now, but it's going to be less funny over time because the humor was so topical.
Oh, you had that insight.
It's very much of its time. It's very 1992 or late 1991, I guess, when they were shooting it.
Yeah,
because they make. You know, there's some
the Grey Poupon,
or they reference what was the pills that they did?
Oh, Nuprin.
Nuprin, little yellow different. And I was like, I did not remember that commercial until Wayne referenced it. And there's a cute runner where he's like, oh no, we're never going to sell out. We're not going to do that. And then he has like a Pizza Hut,
yeah,
and he holds up the pizza and smiles and looks at it. And they shoot it like a commercial.
I thought
very
that
clever.
I remember like watching that the first time. I thought that was like the most genius, hilarious thing I ever seen in my life. Back then.
Yeah.
Like there's a scene
they were making a joke about the product placement.
Yeah, exactly. They're like basically for those that don't know, there's a scene where Rob Lowe is talking to Wayne and Garth on the set of their show, and they're saying, well, you know, we want you to interview. Noah from Noah's Arcade, the guy who's sponsoring yours.
Brian Doyle Murray,
Bill's brother. And, Wayne doesn't want to do it. And he says, product placement or no, I will never sell out. And, like, as he's doing that, he's eating a Pizza Hut pizza.
Right.
And, like, mugging for the camera, like in a commercial.
And he has several of these things in a row. It ends with him, like, holding up a can of Pepsi. And
yes.
Smiling.
And then at one point, they shoot to Garth. And Garth is like decked out head to toe in Reebok gear.
Yeah, yeah. And it starts with his shoes and like pans up. And
then he says, like, you know, when people sell it, they just do it for the money. And that's just sad.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
like it's, at the time, I thought that was hilarious. I was like, what? That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's very cute.
Yeah, yeah. But now it's like, okay. It's cute.
Well, I mean, now we've seen a lot of different shows and movies. They make a meta joke. I remember on like 30 Rock,
right?
They were talking about like, oh no, we don't want to have advertisers dictate what we do. And then like Tina Fey takes a big gulp of Snapple and she's like, hey, this is really good, isn't it? Yeah. And then they all talk about how great Snapple is for a minute. And then Tina Fey just goes, I feel dirty.
So yeah, I think with this movie, this might have been my introduction to like meta comedy like that. And another thing I noticed that they did in this movie is like when they break the fourth wall constantly throughout this. Like,
yeah.
Like Wayne constantly just talks to the camera. Garth constantly talks to the camera.
And they even have a joke where they go into the donut shop and Ed O'Neill is the manager of the donut shop.
Oh, we should talk about Ed O'Neill.
And Ed O'Neill, he starts a monologue and the camera just follows him. And then Wayne comes in and says like, hey, only Garth and I can speak to the camera.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, but Ed O'Neill's character I thought was, I remember younger not getting it.
Yeah,
like now I laugh at how insane he is. For those who don't, Ed O'Neill played,
not getting the joke, not having a horrible sex life. You mean
yes
by not getting
yes.
it.
Yes, well that came later.
Okay,
but yeah, Ed O'Neill's character, he plays this guy Glenn who worked at the donut shop that they hang out in, the Stan Mikita's Donuts.
And yeah,
I guess I looked it up. Stan Mikita, the
hockey player
for the Blackhawks,
and
his character is so strange because like he just says all this really dark, bizarre things. It's like when like the first lines he says to the camera, he's like, I never did a crazy thing in my life before that night. Why is it when a man kills in battle it's called heroic, but when he kills another man in the heat of passion it's called murder? And I was like, what the fuck? What is that?
Yeah.
And like another line he said, you know, if you stab a man in the dead of winter, the steam rises from the wombs. I was like, Jesus Christ. Back then, I just thought it was weird, but now I think it's hilarious.
Like something that surprised me was like how many other celebrities, either people who were well known at the time, are in it, and also like some people have become notable since then.
Yeah,
like in the crew, in like Wayne and Garth's crew, and they're all in the car. Like early in the first 5 minutes of the movie, they have the famous Bohemian Rhapsody sequence.
Oh yeah, we gotta talk about
and
that.
And then like two of those guys, there's Michael DeLuise. Who is Dom DeLuise's son, and he's been on like a ton of TV and stuff. He was on The main thing I remember him from is Sequest DSV.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Okay. And then one of the other guys is Lee Turgeson from Oz.
Huh.
Who was like, I think he was Beecher on Oz.
Wow.
It's just like, that's so weird.
I totally didn't know that.
And like, in the opening of the movie, we open with Rob Lowe's character, the TV exec, Benjamin Kane.
Right.
And he's in bed with a woman. And the woman is Ione Sky from Say Anything.
Yeah, my wife pointed that out, too. It's like, is that the Ione Sky in bed?
Yeah, I was like, is that Ione Sky? And I like looked up the movie on IMDb, and it was like, yeah, it was Ione Sky. Why the hell was she in this? I have no idea. Because it's like a one-scene part.
Yeah, she's not in the rest of the movie. She's just in one scene. It's weird. Like, why?
It's weird. But apparently, I was reading the reason they opened up the movie on Rob Lowe in bed with a woman, because this is not long after he had his sex scandal.
Yeah,
remember
that, when having sex on camera was scandalous?
Yes.
And not like another form of income?
Like Rob Lowe, in case you don't remember, I'm assuming videotaped himself, and he was in bed with like two women. These were two women that he... Or, well, two girls, I should say, because it turned out, I think at least one of them was underage.
Oh.
And this was at the, I believe it was at the Democratic National Convention. And
It was?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Wow. Yeah.
And like, so Rob Lowe.
Democrats.
Yeah, I mean, Rob Lowe, of course, this is early 90s Rob Lowe. And handsome man, and he could go and get a threesome when he's at the Democratic Convention.
Just as easy as you please.
And then this came out, and this, of course, like, really damaged his career. And that's part of the reason why he's in the movie. Lorne Michaels said, like, oh, we can probably get him cheap because of this.
Whoa! I didn't even realize that. Interesting. Okay.
And it's interesting because this is like one of the first comedies that Rob Lowe did. And he's since then carved out a significant chunk of his career in comedy. He had that long run on Parks and Recreation.
And he was Austin Powers with... Mike Myers
doing a killer Robert Wagner impression.
Yeah,
we're gonna have to talk about the Austin Powers movies at some point.
We will. I think Rob Lowe mentioned that, like, how this was like the first comedy he had done that kind of opened the door for him to do other comedies.
Mm-hmm.
And this
mm-hmm.
was him realizing, oh, what, I'm pretty funny, I can do a comedy.
And part of the reason they thought Rob Lowe, it wasn't just because his acting asking price was low, was he'd recently hosted SNL.
Oh, okay.
And that was also after the scandal, because I remember he came out for the monologue, and like they had audience members being mock outraged at him. Like, I have a daughter.
Yeah, I remember. And there was that sketch where he was on the church chat with the church lady.
Oh, yeah. So
and then, like, the church lady paddled him or something,
right,
for being naughty.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. I remember.
As you do.
As you do. I remember that. Wow. Look at where we're uncovering. That's fantastic.
So I mean, that's neat. And it's cool that that Rob Lowe went on to have a great comedy career.
Yeah.
From this, and so he said this was kind of his comedy boot camp, and he sort of taught Mike Myers and Dana Carvey how to be movie actors, because they were experienced sketch comics, but they were very green when it came to shooting a movie with multiple cameras, and they didn't even know what like a mark was on the stage, because like SNL, they don't really have marks, they have
I think it was like Mike Myers' first movie ever.
It was his very first movie. Yeah. Yeah.
Your first movie, and it's like you're starring in it, and everything's riding on you.
That's
got to be nerve wracking.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right. Well, so I mean, you touched on it before, so maybe we should talk about the big Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, let's do that.
Because from what I've read, like, Mike and Dana were not crazy about shooting that scene.
It sounded like it was kind of a slog to film because they had to literally bang their heads.
Yeah,
and it's a movie. You got just the one camera. You got all. I misspoke before when I said it was multiple cameras. It's just the one camera, and they're doing all the coverage from all the various angles.
Right.
And they've got like five guys in the car.
Yeah,
and
yeah. I mean, if you look at the scene, you can see Mike Myers is he's kind of moving his head, but not really. He's doing it very gently.
Yeah,
and he's like, you know, grinding his teeth, and like, I mean, the guys in the back are just totally headbanging, but they're like,
yeah.
But I mean, maybe they're more experienced headbangers.
There's an actual oral history of this scene on Rolling Stone, and Lee Turgeson is like, yeah, I was the only like genuine headbanger, and I went and watched a video of that scene, and yeah, he's really wailing,
yeah,
in that scene, much harder than the other guys. So I think,
yeah, like Mike and Dana, like they're kind of doing, but they've been doing.
They're bobbing their heads.
Yeah, like they've been doing it all night, and they're probably their neck hurt. I remember them hearing they've been complaining about like my neck really hurts. I can't do this anymore.
And Mike Myers has actually said, I watched a behind the scenes featurette. He says, like, I can see in the movie the scenes that we shot the day or two after the Bohemian Rhapsody scene, because it's like we're bending at the waist to turn to people because they were trying not to turn their necks. Their necks hurt so much.
Gotcha.
But
yeah, but I mean the genius of putting Bohemian Rhapsody in this movie was pretty fantastic. I mean, we all know like that that wasn't the studio's first choice. They wanted like a Guns N' Roses song.
Yeah, because that was like the current hot band, and right. Mike Myers actually threatened to quit the movie if it wasn't Bohemian Rhapsody, because like this was something that grew out of him driving around in the car with his family, and this is right. something he did with his family.
Yeah,
and he said
he'd headbang with his family to Bohemian Rhapsody.
Or they would all sing along to it, like they would each do a Galileo part. You know, Galileo, Galileo, Galileo. Yeah, and he reasoned that if this was something that my family and I did, it's probably something that others did too. And actually, one of the actors. I think the guy who played Phil, the guy they pick up.
Right, right.
He said, like, please put me in this scene because this is something I used to do with my family.
What?
And like, the next rewrite, he was like, oh, yeah, then they put me in the scene.
That's fantastic.
And, yeah. I mean, isn't that cool?
If you're going to spew into this.
Yeah. And that was an improv by Dana Carvey.
I kind of felt it, but it still was a cute scene. I was like, oh, that's neat. But yeah, but like I mean, when I saw this at 14, that's honestly the first time I think I ever heard that song before. Like, I thought about like this movie after watching it, and like I kind of realized this movie introduced me and probably a lot of other, you know, preteens and teenagers at the time introduced me to like a lot of classic rock that I never heard before.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of classic rock throughout this whole movie. I mean, of course, there's Queen. There's two Jimi Hendrix songs in this thing.
Yeah.
There's Alice Cooper, of course. Then there's Ballroom Blitz, which I'd never heard from before. And I was like, wow, that was my first time hearing a lot of classic rock. And there's a Black Sabbath song that plays when Wayne gets pulled over by Robert Patrick.
Yeah, yeah.
And we'll talk about that later.
But, yeah, and Alice Cooper has a cameo.
Yeah, Alice Cooper, of course. And like all this music I'd never heard of before because like I'd never listened to classic rock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at that time, and this introduced me to opened up my eyes to a whole new world of possibilities.
And the Bohemian Rhapsody sequence actually opened, it gave Queen a bit of a career revival.
It did.
Like the song actually charted again.
That's fantastic.
It went to number 9 the first time it was released, and it went to number 2 when it was released. Now, this was partly also because Freddie Mercury happened to die like 3 months before the release, so they, of course, there was a lot of Queen in the press too. But this certainly helped.
Yeah,
Mike Myers supposedly sent the scene over to Queen, you know, for their approval.
Mm-hmm.
And Freddie Mercury supposedly did see it shortly before he died. He was very ill at the time, of course, but he gave his blessing on it.
Wow,
and you like that.
How about that? That's very fantastic. And then Mike Myers had that scene in the Bohemian Rhapsody movie.
Yes.
Where he played like a EMI exec that didn't really exist. But he was in the film saying, oh, no one's going to like this song. They won't be able to bang their heads to it in cars. Which was a wink and a nod.
And then he turned to the camera and he says, do you get it, everyone? Do you get it?
Did everybody get that?
Because it's me, Mike Myers. And he takes off his makeup. And
like Scooby-Doo style. Yeah. Like, Mike Myers. I would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for you Snoopy kids.
This is the movie that codified that Scooby-Doo gag. I would have gotten away with it too.
Yeah, I guess
it wasn't for you meddling kids.
Yeah, I know. This movie they throw back a lot to like old school stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, this movie's all right.
And it's it's neat to see. You know, it holds up pretty well. I wouldn't say I loved it, but I'd say it's an okay movie. It's certainly it's a fun comedy. It held my attention.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the things that held a 14-year-old Darren's attention, the introduction of a young Tia Carrera.
Tia Carrera, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She's
a babe.
Dreamweaver. That part I like too. Like every time he's hit her, you hear Dreamweaver.
Yeah, she's got the little sparkly filter running around
Dreamweaver.
Her. And yeah, you just hear the song Dreamweaver. That was very cute. Yeah, she's very attractive. She's very hot.
In the
movie. There was a lot more Tia Carrera musical numbers in this than I remembered.
Yeah, there was a good chunk. I think you could tell they were really trying to, I guess, make her a thing try to like springboard her to like the next thing.
I mean, I knew she had a music career. She actually has a song, like a ballad that plays at the end of Batman, The Mask of the Phantasm. It plays over the closing credits.
Oh,
and it's like
really?
Sort of a torch song thing.
Oh,
yeah,
I didn't know that.
So that's probably the Tia Carrera song I've heard the most just because I watched that movie the most. But
okay.
Yeah, here you hear her singing a lot of classic rock song. She sings Sweets, Ballroom Blitz towards the end.
Ballroom Blitz, Fire. Maybe those are the only two.
Oh, yeah. Let Me Stand Next to Your Fire. That's right.
Let me stand next to your fire.
That's a great song.
That's a fantastic song. My God. Underrated Hendrix song, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely.
You hear it on the radio from time to time, but you don't hear as much as like All Along the Watchtower. And,
right.
You know, Foxy Lady and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But we need to hear more Fire.
We do need to hear more Fire. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. If you take one thing away from this podcast, let that be it.
Yes.
We want to hear Jimi Hendrix's Fire on the radio more often.
We know you're listening Q104.3 Classic Rock. So you know, yes, just do as we say. Please and thank you. But I mean, another thing I liked about this movie, one thing I really dug about how they kind of gave Garth a little bit more to do. Mm-hmm. Because, like, Dana Carvey, he plays more... I mean, he gets more screen time in this movie than Wayne. Oh, maybe as much time as Wayne.
It's a pretty equal partnership between them. I would say, like, yeah, the Garth character I really dug.
Yeah. In this.
I think my favorite moments are the Garth moments.
He kind of steals the movie a little bit.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. He's so soft-spoken, and, you know, he just, And I was reading Dana Carvey, he based the character on his brother Brad,
yes,
who's sort of apparently a technical genius. You could ask him to fix something and he'd be like, yeah, I fixed the washer dryer. it's working now.
Yeah, because I like that, because like if you watch Wayne's World from the sketches, you don't get a sense of who Garth is really, because he doesn't really have a personality. So like,
his one direction, Mike Myers, was just like, Garth worships Wayne, and that was it. And then Dana Carvey develop the character from there.
Okay.
So
you worship me. Go.
Yeah.
And go. But yeah, but
and
like,
that ironically, the direction I gave to Darren right before we started this podcast.
I know.
It's like, you worship me.
I know, John, you're so cool, man. Yeah, you're the coolest. You're so neat.
Yeah, thanks.
You're so great.
Thanks.
But yeah, but I mean, as far as the sketch goes, like the Wayne's World sketches, you don't really get a sense of who Garth is. Like, I mean, Wayne comes in fully formed just because, mm-hmm. you know, Mike's been doing him for so long. But Garth is kind of whatever. Like, but in the movie, like you said, he's more fully formed. He's he's like a very soft-spoken, meek, shy guy. But he's also like a savant when it comes to like technological stuff and fixing stuff. And the drums, of course, that big drum scene he had to wear.
Yeah, and Dana Carvey, of course, plays the drums in real life.
That was Dana Carvey playing the drums.
Yeah, so. he plays the drums in a Church Lady sketch, I remember.
Yes, I remember that
Danny
too.
DeVito.
Yeah, before Fred Armisen, we had Dana Carvey.
That's true. That's true.
I forgot the name.
The SNL cast member drummers.
That's right.
It's a very small elite club.
It's just those two guys.
Just Dana and Fred meeting for dinner once a month.
Yes. Absolutely. But the fact that they fleshed out Garth's character a little bit more. Really, and there's one thing I kind of noticed. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if he meant to play it this way, but like whenever Garth is talking to somebody else, he's very kind of shy and awkward, and he looks like he just wants to hide, except for when he's talking to Wayne. When he talks to Wayne, he's way more comfortable and way more relaxed.
That's a good observation,
He speaks up more. He speaks his mind more.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's interesting. Like, maybe, you know, that speaks to their friendship. Like,
yeah, I'm sure that was totally intentional.
Yeah, yeah. He's more relaxed around Wayne.
I also read, like, Dana Carvey, he chose to give Garth an overbite, so he would like bring his upper jaw forward when he was playing, which was a fine thing to do for like a 5-minute sketch on live TV.
Yeah,
but he was doing it long hours on the movie, so his jaw was hurting at the end of the day.
When you make acting choices like that, just think of comfortability first.
Yeah, yeah.
Because whatever you do, you're gonna have to be doing that.
You have to live with it.
You got to live with that, and that's you don't want to hurt your jaw out. Yikes!
And but I mean, so many of the Garth lines I really liked. I love it when there's a scene where it's Wayne and Garth are just sitting on the hood of the car and they're at the airport. They're waiting for the plane to come over.
Like, do people do that? And I never even thought to do that.
I'm sure that somebody has done that at some point in the history of, especially in a small town when there's not a lot to do.
Aurora.
But Garth just he whistles the Star Trek theme and then he just goes, "Someday I'd like to go where no man has gone before. But I'll probably just stay in Aurora."
I don't know. I kind of like scenes like that. It's a very sweet scene, like just between two friends and just like them talking about, "Oh, do you ever find Bugs Bunny attractive when she puts on clothes and be a girl bunny?" And Wayne was like, no.
And I saw something really interesting about that. That scene of them on the hood of the car, that was like the very last scene that they shot for the movie. And the schedule in this movie was so tight. They had like 32 days they were shooting with the actors. Right. And then like 2 days of the location shoots elsewhere. But the schedule was so tight that when they finished shooting that scene, the actors got on a plane. They were like still in makeup. And they got on a plane to go back to SNL to like start writing for the new season because they had to be there by Labor Day. God, so they,
damn,
yeah. And but that last
that's
scene,
a wrap.
That last scene was like pretty much improvised.
Right.
It was just because I guess there weren't any big plot points they had to cover. Yeah. Or anything.
It's like, so, it's the last day. Just shoot whatever.
So it was Mike Myers and Dana Carvey just riffing, and the Bugs Bunny thing was just a riff of Dana Carvey's, but Wayne going no and then laughing. That was Mike Myers genuinely cracking up at something else that had been said, but it was such a great genuine reaction that the director Penelope Spheeris, she just edited it in, which is a tough sentence to say. She pressed the edit button and it went in there, and she used it because it was just such a cool genuine reaction. So
yeah, it was like when I remember watching it in the theater, like when that part where he laughs, like. Even back then, I was like, that's a real laugh. That's
yeah.
He's not putting on airs. That's like, that's from the heart.
Yeah, and she was like, oh, this is much better than a fake laugh. So
it was.
She put it in. Yeah,
yeah, that's one of the funniest parts in the movie where it's like, oh, me neither. I was just asking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we should talk about the director, Penelope Spheeris. We haven't mentioned her yet. She was the choice to direct this movie. She'd actually directed or produced some of when Albert Brooks did his film segments on SNL.
I was going to mention that. I thought, oh, he...
Well,
oh,
I beat you to it, Darren.
Oh, I was like, oh, John's not going to know this. And here we are.
Yeah.
But yeah, he produced Albert Brooks's stuff.
Yeah, she did.
She did. What?
You said he.
I apologize.
Yeah.
I'm the problem. I'm cis male.
Yeah.
She
and she had also just recently directed The Decline of Western Civilization,
right.
Parts 1 and 2, which were movies all about the heavy metal scene.
I think the first one was about the punk rock, and the second one was about the heavy metal.
Oh, okay. Thank you for the correction. And since they decided that Wayne and Garth were basically headbangers, and she knew all about that scene, they thought she would be good. And also because she had the experience in documentary filmmaking, she knew how to shoot cheap and fast. Which they really needed to do because they didn't have time to do a whole lot of takes in this movie because the schedule was so tight.
It was. But I mean, I also read that like Mike Myers, like according to Penelope, Mike Myers is a little bit difficult to work with on this.
Yeah, they clashed.
Yeah, they clashed a bit. Like apparently, she remembers one instance where Mike was upset because at the snack table they didn't have margarine for his bagel. He only had butter.
Sure.
And that was enough to cause him to get enraged, flip the table over, and storm off to his trailer.
He literally flipped a table.
That's what she said.
I mean, I know it's a high-stress situation when you're, like, carrying a movie, and it's your first movie and all that, but wow.
That's a bit nuts.
I mean, but Mike Myers, he is almost notoriously, he's a perfectionist, and I'm sure he's probably tougher on himself than anybody.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I also read that somewhere that, like, at the time, I think Myers said like his dad was in his health wasn't great.
So I thought it was Dana Carvey.
It might have been
saying that. I think Dana Carvey's father was ill.
Oh, maybe it wasn't Mike's.
Maybe both their fathers were ill.
I don't know
where I read that now. But
if it is Mike's father, like I thought maybe because like they had that on him too, so maybe that's why he was just flipping out over butter.
Extenuating circumstances.
Yes, absolutely.
Let's say, but apparently Penelope Spheeris, she was sort of caught in the middle of a lot of these things because like she would shoot a scene her way, she would shoot a scene Lorne Michaels' way, she would shoot a scene Mike Myers' way, and then Bonnie and Terry Turner, who were like two of the writers on the movie, she'd shoot a scene their way, and then they'd figure out like you know what the best one was in the editing room. And apparently Mike Myers did not agree with all of her choices
in
the movie, and he was initially unhappy with the final cut.
Yeah, I heard that too. Like he wasn't happy. I don't know if Dana was happy. I think he thought it was okay. But.
Yeah, and apparently Dana Carvey and Mike Myers clashed a bit. I think, kind of had a falling out after they did the Wayne's World movies and did not talk for a number of years.
Ooh.
But,
and of course, apparently Mike Myers was so not crazy about the final cut of Wayne's World that she, word has it that she got Penelope Spheeris blocked from doing the sequel, Wayne's World 2.
Yeah.
And yeah,
which is a shame.
It's a shame, but I mean, Penelope, she went on to do a bunch of other movies. She did The Little Rascals. She directed the Beverly Hillbillies movie.
She directed one of the David Spade, Chris Farley movies.
Black Sheep. And I think the last movie she did was Senseless with David Spade and Marlon Wayans. And I think she had issues. Well, she was working with the Weinsteins there, and she had issues. And I think
so. That must have just gone beautifully, smoothly, no problems there.
Smooth as eggs.
Yep,
no problem there. But you know, after
working with Harvey Weinstein, that's as close to a paradise as you get in Hollywood, right?
Oh my God!
Am I right?
Oh,
everyone,
you're on Easy Street. Oh boy, this got awkward. But yeah, like she, I think after that, she kind of wanted to step away from Hollywood. She was not, you know, Hollywood kind of. She felt like after she did Wayne's World and after this Wayne's World movie made a ton of money, she would get more opportunities, but it, you know, didn't. She felt like she wouldn't get the opportunity she was, and probably, you know, most likely because she's a woman director, probably.
Yeah, no, and I'm sure that's the case. I mean, because I think still in Hollywood, women directors don't get as many opportunities. It's changing a bit now.
Yeah,
a little bit. But they certainly don't get as many turns at bat as a male director does. It's like if a female director screws up, that's it.
Yeah. Oh, here's a quote from her. So somebody asked her in an interview saying, you directed a bunch of studio fodder, including The Little Rascals, Sense and Senseless. What steered you in this direction? And she's quoted as saying, when someone offers you $2.5 million to direct a film, you just fucking take it. I took the money and made a bunch of movies, The Little Rascals, The Beverly Hillbillies, Black Sheep, and Senseless. After I did Wayne's World, I tried like hell to direct movies I had written and books that I wanted to adapt for film. I tried so hard to do something besides television remakes, but I couldn't get anything going. That is where the sexism in the film industry becomes all too apparent. If I was a guy, I swear to God, I would have been able to get my own shit going after Wayne's World.
Hmm.
And she also said about Mike Myers, I hated that bastard for years. But when I saw Austin Powers, I went, I forgive you, Mike. You can be moody, you can be a jerk. You can be things that others of us can't be because you are profoundly talented, and I forgive you.
Yeah.
So there you go. I mean, it seems like they made nice.
Yeah, and you talk to them today, like they of course play all the feud stuff way down, and
yeah.
I mean, thank God they ended up with a good movie out of it, because
yeah,
I mean, it'd be horrible if you have a awful working experience and
the
movie's
a terrible
no good.
Movie.
Yeah,
it's like, oh wow, this movie's shit, and I hate him.
Yeah, which I'm sure happens a lot, but
I don't doubt it.
But, was another interesting bit of trivia I found is Wayne's ex-girlfriend, Stacy, who's played by Laura Flynn Boyle. That was apparently based on a real ex-girlfriend of Mike Myers.
I was
going to
bring that up, too. God damn you, Don Trumbull.
You're really aggressive about this stuff. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Do you want me to look at your list and then I'll try to stay away from other bits of trivia you have earmarked for yourself?
No, it's fine. Go ahead.
Do you want to tell the story?
No, I won't tell it anymore.
Okay.
I won't tell anymore.
But the ex-girlfriend actually gave Mike Myers a gun rack.
Yeah.
Which he did in the movie. And then and she is called a psycho hose beast in the movie. And Mike Myers' real-life ex actually saw the movie with her new steady boyfriend.
Yeah.
Was mortified to learn that the gun rack anecdote had been written into the film, but was also shocked to see that the main characters referred to her as a psycho hose beast.
Yeah.
Sometime later, Myers telephoned his former girl, attempting to apologize for including a very distracting version of her, detracting version of her in the movie.
Ooh.
So, that happened.
Yeah. That's a little awkward.
I mean, you write what you know, but yeah, that can get awkward if it's involving real people.
It is. Yeah, you got to switch it up so people don't get offended by stuff like that, folks.
But, I mean, come on. If an ex-girlfriend had given me a gun rack and I was writing a movie, I'd probably put that in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, she said she did it like a joke or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and he didn't take it as a joke.
He didn't get the joke. It's like, oh. Yeah. It's like, what am I going to do with a gun rack?
Yeah.
God, this movie's so quotable. There's like so many quotes, like... Like, I remember after I watched it, I remember just saying, you know, get the net and stuff like that afterwards. It's a very quotable movie, this thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, Dick Sargent, Dick York.
Sergeant York.
Oh, that's weird.
I love that. I love that.
This is like a little thing they did. Just like,
yeah.
I wonder if that was improvised. That might have been.
I enjoy that because that's just such a throwaway thing. But
we're looking down Wayne's basement.
Oh, I just saw on the IMDb, it was Mike Myers' father who was ill. So you were right on that. He says, I remember finishing the film, then I remember my dad dying, he said in an interview in 2013.
Yipes.
So
Oh boy. Yeah. So you can tell he was under a lot of. I mean, that's not excusing his behavior, but.
But yeah.
It's understanding it a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's putting it in context.
Like your first movie, your dad's ill, and like literally all eyes are on you to make this.
Sure.
Make sure this
yeah,
thing
a lot
takes
of
off.
A lot of pressure, a lot of stuff going on. One cameo I really loved in the movie was Alice Cooper's.
Yeah. That came out of nowhere.
That was great. Apparently, it was originally supposed to be Aerosmith.
Because
they'd been on the sketch on SNL.
Right.
And they did even sort of similar kind of gag with Alice Cooper, where they ask him a question, and then Alice Cooper, he goes on this very intellectual...
Yeah. It's called Millie Walk Hay.
Yeah.
it's from the Indian Algonquin name. For the good land.
And they're the only city in the United States who've elected three socialist mayors. And
then his band member says, hey, isn't the blah, 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 blah?
Yeah.
It's like, yes, Stan, it is.
Yeah. And apparently he got... Like, Alice Cooper gets to the set. He was just expecting to, like, sing his song and maybe have a line or two, but they give him, like, this long monologue, and he has, like, 20 minutes to memorize the whole damn thing.
Oh.
But... It did great. Alice Cooper was great. And that happened because of Penelope Spheeris' connections with him through doing the Decline of Western Civilization movie. I don't know why Aerosmith turned it down, though.
Oh, maybe scheduling or something?
I don't know. Oh. I couldn't find that information. But, I mean, because Aerosmith was really funny on the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was the same sort of gag in the movie. I'm assuming they just kind of redistributed the dialogue.
Absolutely.
But... But hey, Al stepped up to the plate.
Still works.
Did a great job.
Still works. I still dig it. What else was I say? Oh, and I'm just looking through my notes here. Before we talked about how the movie kind of goes back into like a lot of old school stuff that you had to like kind of, you know, if you enjoyed old school stuff, you'd know it.
Yeah.
Like the Scooby-Doo ending.
Yeah.
Or the one big shot that they had, which kind of came out of nowhere when they went to Milwaukee and were like, hey, Schott's Brewery. And then they recreated the theme to the opening credits to Laverne and Shirley.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
for no reason. It just like stuck that in. I mean, it's one of the things. Like, if you didn't see Laverne and Shirley, you wouldn't get it.
And I'm sure that mystifies people who might be watching the movie today who are like younger than us and didn't grow up watching Laverne and Shirley the way we did.
Yeah. But, and they're like, what is this?
Because, I mean, that show's not really on much anymore.
Not really. It's not on reruns. I don't even people think watch reruns anymore. Do people watch reruns?
I guess.
People just like stream whatever.
No.
What do people do? What do people do, John?
I don't know. I don't do things. I mean, that's like if you do things and things start to happen and like you meet people and then you have conversations and
where's that go?
I mean, I can work up the courage to do this like once a week, but more than that. Oh god, no.
The outside world is overrated.
No.
Don't.
Do you know how weird it gets out there?
Just everybody just stay in your hovel and just don't interact with
absolutely.
Anybody. Absolutely. It leads to nowhere.
That is the way to live.
That's right. There's no glory in talking.
I don't need human contact.
No.
Fuck that shit.
What? No. Please. Just God. What must people think of us? Oh, my Lord.
But, apparently the Laverne and Shirley thing, I mean, that caused a lot of confusion when they had to, like, dub the movie overseas. Like, in France, they had no idea what Laverne and Shirley was.
It's a sacre bleu.
And so it's just this weird, random thing that happens in the middle of the movie. I mean, it's that way for us, too, but even more so there. And, like, the American idiom was so strong in the movie. Like Where Wayne says, like, monkeys might fly out of my butt. In some foreign country, they had to redub that as, like, oh, maybe when Judgment Day comes or something like that.
My God, that sounds darker.
I know.
Maybe when the Lord takes us off this mortal coil. Like, Jesus, why'd you say that?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, as far as cameos go, they had a quick cameo by the late, great Chris Farley was in there.
Mm-hmm.
Cameo by the great Meatloaf.
Meatloaf, yes.
Again, with the whole classic rock feel of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, that Robert Patrick scene where when Wayne pulls over his car and he gets pulled over by the
T-1000.
T-1000s.
From Terminator 2, which had just come out the year before.
Yeah. And I remember, like, watching it, you know, at the time, when I saw it when I was 14, I remember thought that was a hilarious scene. And I watch it now, I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, see, that's the sort of thing that I was talking about at the top of the show, where it was something that was very, very funny in 1992, or like the Grey Poupon gag, or the Motrin Little Yellow Different gag.
Little Yellow Different, yeah.
So it was really to speak to the audience of that time, and that's not really a joke for the ages.
Yeah, no, because I remember, I think I read somewhere that like that was another scene that Mike didn't like. He didn't think it was funny, but he... it played off super well when, and the test audience was like, all right, I guess we got to keep it.
Yeah.
I think he was quoted as saying the audience went shithouse over it.
Okay.
So they're like, all right, well, we want
Well, hey, if it works, it works. You know,
people go shithouse. People go shithouse.
Yeah. You know, that's what you want in a comedy. You want the people to go shithouse. If they, if the audience loses control of their bowels.
Yes.
That's, I mean, that's the dream.
That's right.
That's the dream. You want a whole bunch of incontinent people watching your movie.
That's right. You want to hire a bunch of people to mop up after them.
Exactly.
That's the dream.
Exactly. Oh, here's a little interesting bit of trivia I just found.
What you got?
Colleen Camp is in the movie. She plays the wife of Noah, the video game owner. She also played Yvette in Clue, which, like Wayne's World, has three alternate endings.
What?
Isn't that neat? Huh. She's been in two movies with three endings.
Hot dog. How about that?
That's nifty.
Yeah, but I thought that was pretty interesting, too, where it had like three alternate...
Mm-hmm. They have the dark ending that's unhappy for everyone. They have the super mega happy ending, and then they have the Scooby-Doo ending.
I think they put that in there because they want to make fun of like the way people movies had to change their endings depending on how the test audiences like it. I believe that's what they said.
And then when they unmask Rob Lowe, and he's like an old man, and it's Carl Oldie Olsen from the Conan O'Brien show, who I have very fond memories of.
Oldie Olsen?
Yeah, that's what they called him, Carl Oldie Olsen.
Oh,
I think Carl Olsen was his real name. I'm not 100% certain on that.
Oh, okay.
Cool. Yeah,
and also in this movie, Donna Dixon.
Donna Dixon, Dan Aykroyd's wife.
Dan Aykroyd's flame.
Yeah. They're still together.
Oh, what?
I believe.
Oh, God bless them.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's, I think she has like all of one dialogue, in, one line of dialogue in the movie.
She says, I love you, Garth, at the end. That's literally all she
does. And the rest, and she's just shot in soft focus with
flowing
Dreamweaver.
Hair.
Yeah, with a fan blowing in her hair.
Yeah, yeah. Again, another reason why 14-year-old Darren had to go see this movie for first. I was like, oh,
Donna Dixon. I have fond memories of her from Bosom Buddies.
Oh my God, Bosom Buddies.
Bosom Buddies. Loved that show.
It's a fantastic show.
I was like 10 or 12 when that was on, and that was a great show.
Pretty ladies.
Yep. Hey,
pretty ladies. Pretty.
And Mike Myers' wife at the time. Robin Rusin has a cameo as a waitress at the donut shop.
Okay.
So she was married to Mike Myers from 1993 to 2006.
Oh, right.
So I guess they weren't married quite yet. They were just dating.
Oh, they were just in. Oh, so it was like, can you put my girlfriend in this movie?
Yeah.
All right.
So, you know, that's nice.
Far out.
As far as I know, I don't believe any of Dana Carvey's spouses showed up in the movie.
Oh.
So what the hell, Dana?
Yeah.
I mean, we know you modeled Garth after your brother and all that, but come on, get your wife in a movie.
Get your lady love.
What the hell are you doing?
Get your lady love some love in there. Come and get your love. All right. Well, so what about you? So as far as the movie goes, what were some of your favorite parts of this film? I mean, did anything hold up, or was it all just like,
You know, I think it.
Did you like it the first time you saw it? You did, right?
I thought it was okay at best. I mean, and I still think, you know, it's okay. There's some bits that tickle me more than others.
Okay.
I would say.
Well, what tickled you?
Well, I've mentioned a lot of them. A lot of the Garth lines, the Star Trek line, the Sergeant York line. I mean, I like. I'm not so as enamored of the catchphrase stuff. I enjoy like the little improv moments and things like that.
All right, John's Mr. Intellectual Comedy here.
I'm way above it all.
Yeah.
I'm way up here. I can barely see you down there. I shout so you can hear me?
Oh, you plebeians.
Way down there. What about you? How does it hold up for you?
I mean, I guess in the same way you do. Like, I enjoy it. I mean, there's all the nostalgia for me with this one. When I first saw it, I thought it was hilarious.
Right.
But mainly because of, you know,
the 14 thing.
Yeah, 14 catchphrases like schwing.
Yeah.
And, you know,
and Tia Carrera
and Donna Dixon.
Is it Carrera or Carrera?
Carrera.
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 Che.
Stuff like that made me laugh. And, of course, the scene where Wayne is interviewing Noah from Noah's Arcade.
Uh-huh.
Get it? Noah's Arcade.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Get it? And like, he has the index cards, and written on them is things like Sphincter Boy.
Yes.
And he blows goats. I have proof.
Yes.
And this man has no penis.
Right.
Like, that was literally the funniest thing I'd ever seen in my life at the time.
Literally.
Literally
the funniest thing
ever
seen.
Yes. At that time, literally, that was the height of comedy for for young Darren
Patterson. I think 14 is like probably the perfect age to watch this movie. Yeah,
Like I watch it now, I was like, oh, that's all right, that's clever. That's
cool. Yeah. I mean, we're two dudes in our 40s now. I wouldn't expect it to speak to us the same way.
We're more mature,
yes,
if you will.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we're more like the old guy in the who is asked for the grape upon in the limo.
Exactly.
That's our demographic now.
Yes, when we watch comedies now, we wear smoking jackets and have a pipe, and we go,
Well, I have a cigarette holder.
Oh, wow.
And a monocle. I have a monocle.
John also has a pencil-thin mustache.
That's true.
Much like John Waters.
That's true.
And he goes, ho, ho, ho. That's,
yes, that's, yes. I have my manservant, Jeeves, come over and bring me a cocktail. While I watch these movies for this podcast.
I have a snifter of cognac.
Yes.
Whilst I watch comedy.
Bring my brandy.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, this airplane is quite hilarious.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes, I see. Oh, the boy is reading Nun's Life. Yes. Oh, that very droll. Oh, very droll.
Oh, quite. So anyway, so this movie, I mean, it was a huge hit, this movie. Mm-hmm, like, I, you know, just everything, like, everything was a Wayne's World for a while. People were just quoting Wayne's World.
It was omnipresent.
Omnipresent. And some of you may remember there was, I mean, not only did this movie spawn a video game, there was Wayne's World, the video game. You can see it on YouTube, and it's not good.
Yeah.
But there was also, I don't know if you remember this, Wayne's World, the roller coaster. Do you remember that?
I read a little bit of trivia on this. I don't. Why don't you tell us a little bit about
this? It was a roller coaster called the Hurler.
Sure.
And it debuted in Carowinds in South Carolina and King's Dominion in Virginia for like a year or two before it left in like 94.
Now, didn't these parks, like, weren't they owned by Paramount or something like that?
I believe so. I mean, King's Dominion I've been to when I was a kid. And like, I remember them, it being like kind of Paramount themed. If I'm not mistaken, I think it was like a Yogi Bear land in there. So, and they probably own Paramount too. So.
Okay.
But so yeah, so like whatever Paramount, I guess King's Dominion was like, oh, we got to have a ride because our Paramount overlords say we got it.
Yeah, and I understand that both those rides are still around, but they've taken away the Wayne's World branding.
Yeah. I mean, they basically just slapped a Wayne's World sticker on a wooden roller coaster and be like, oh, yeah, this is the Wayne's World roller coaster now.
Sure.
And then they probably, once that was done, they just peeled off the sticker and put up whatever Paramount thing is out
that's
now.
So, that's so sad.
A Night at the Roxbury roller coaster.
We're all about the Butabi brothers now, boys.
What is love?
Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me no more. I watched the trailer of that the other day in anticipation. Well, you know, because we're going to be covering that in a few weeks.
Yeah.
Never seen that one.
I remember it being a movie.
That's it. Okay. Well, that's something to look forward to. That's we'll be covering that in a few weeks on here on the SNL Nerd. That's so
we will be covering a movie.
Tuned for that.
Uh-huh.
So is that it on Wayne's World? Are we done? You've closed your notebook of notes.
Yeah, I mean, that's all the notes I had. I was just like, I mean, Wayne's World, classic movie.
Thumbs up, thumbs down.
I'll give it a thumbs up. I mean, it does have a lot of good, you know, quips and jokes in there. Yeah. For me, there's a nostalgia element.
Yeah,
that
always helps.
You know, for the most part, it holds up.
I will give it a moderate thumbs up. I will, but my thumb will be like tilted at a 45-degree angle.
Okay,
not quite at the right angle, the optimum thumbs up. But it'll be in the upward motion,
like an isosceles triangle.
Exactly.
Isosceles, or I haven't taken math in years.
Sure,
but yeah, isosceles. Yeah,
yeah.
Less than 45 degrees. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know school much.
Me know me use don't words
know.
Good.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Wayne's World. That's
Wayne's World.
That's Wayne's World.
Check it out again. You might enjoy yourself.
Yeah, or maybe not.
Or maybe not.
Whatever. Yeah,
maybe we don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah, maybe we're just talking out of our ass. Who knows?
Yeah, most likely. Yeah.
But so that's it. And if you like this podcast and you want to hear more, you know, rate, review, and subscribe and such.
Yeah. And speaking of that, we do have a couple more reviews.
Speaking of reviews,
over on the
On the interwebs?
I was going to say the iTunes, but, you know, Apple's changing it now. So now I think it's like Apple Podcasts.
What's going to happen to my... I buy albums here, man.
I don't... No, I think, you know, like all the stuff is going to stay. It's just they're separating it out.
Oh.
I was talking about this with my friend Frank the other day. Okay. And, yeah, so it's going to be like Apple TV, Apple Podcasts, Apple Music.
Oh.
I think what you have is going to stay. I mean, it might just be rebranded in an update or something.
If I don't have my Christopher Cross album on this phone, I'm headed to a roll.
You have to get caught between the moon and New
York
City.
There it is.
I mean,
I know it's crazy.
Sometimes that's the best you can do. But we got a couple nice nice reviews here. We're gonna read them here. How about I read one, you read the other?
Sure. Which one do you want to go for?
I'll do the Danny Vega one.
Okay.
So we have Danny Vega, which he left on Thursday and gives us 5 stars. Thank you, Danny. The headline is informative and great. Loving the summer format of talking about past SNL episodes. Actually, the movies, but okay, we'll take it.
Okay.
Plus the normal routine of reviewing the current one. This is a great nod for a great pod for sketch comedy fans, SNL fans, and anyone who's interested in the comedy world in general. The hosts are very funny and have an excellent rapport. A must.
We do have an excellent rapport, don't we?
Oh, never talk to me.
Oh.
Never, never talk to me.
You're right, John. I'm sorry. You're so cool. You're so cool. I'm sorry. You're cool.
Yes, you need to worship me more. That's,
oh, boy.
All right, so we got another review here.
Another 5-star review. Helped me get through a 5-hour layover in Richmond.
Oh.
So I had listened to...
Who is this from?
Oh, Mohiner?
Moner.
Moner. M-O-H-N-I-N-E-I-R.
Okay.
Mohiner? Mohiner?
I'm just going to say Moner.
Moner.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so Moner says, so I had listened to their collaboration with SNL After Party before, but over Memorial Day weekend when it was 2 a.m. and I still had 3 hours to go before I could board my flight home, these guys were so entertaining. They made the last hours before boarding my flight breeze through. I now have 2 SNL podcasts to listen to. Despite their structure being looser than After Party, I enjoyed it because their perspective is different, and I pick up on new things from their podcast as well. P.S. The riff on Batman villains during the Emma Thompson Jonas Brothers episode is hilarious.
I have absolutely no memory of us doing a riff on Batman villains.
You don't remember that at all?
I don't think I do. I think I'd have to listen back to that episode.
No memory.
No.
All right.
I mean, I do not doubt that this happened, because if there is one truism in my life, it's that I can talk about Batman at a moment's notice.
He can.
If we sat down to record this and you were just like, John, it's no longer an SNL podcast, it's now a Batman podcast, I would be fine.
Wow. I mean, I'd have to do some background work on that, but
that's okay. I could take up the slack. Yeah.
John, your thoughts on Batman Forever?
It is not good. It is not. It is bad.
Excellent.
It is not good, and it is bad. I could expound on the reasons and ways why it is bad, but that would take more time than we have at the moment.
We'll save that for Patreon.
Sure.
I just wanted to get a quick riff. But thanks for that lovely review, Moner. Jay.
I'm also intrigued that we've apparently become a go-to podcast for people on layovers.
I'm fine with that.
That's cool. Maybe that should be a slogan or something.
That's right.
Yeah, let's listen to us on a layover.
Yeah, when you're in the middle, when you're in Dallas or
Richmond
wherever, you know,
3 hours, 5 hours, whatever.
Yeah,
we've got a decent back catalog now. So.
Yeah. So when you're in Sheboygan or whatever, and you're just waiting for your plane.
Sheboygan.
It's just a funny word.
Sheboygan.
Sheboygan. So just listen to us while you're in wherever you're in, and let us entertain you.
Yeah.
Fine listeners.
So next week we are going to continue on with the SNL movies, and next week we are going to cover 1993's Coneheads.
Coneheads.
Have you ever seen this before?
I saw it once. Years and years and years ago, and I I remember a few things about it, but not a lot.
Okay.
What about you?
I have never seen the Coneheads movie.
Ooh.
I remember the trailers. I remember that they had a tie-in with Subway.
Yes, I remember that. Yes.
They had a big thing, you know. And
sandwich.
And the daughter, like, eats a sub in a, like, a foot-long sub in
she,
a,
like, unhinges her
bites.
Jaw and yeah. eats a sandwich, like,
yeah,
gulp.
And then Chris Farley's like, my mother's the only other woman I knew who could take a sandwich like that, because, ha-ha, fat people.
Fatty go boom.
So, yeah, this will be interesting to see. I've never seen this before. It's going to be new.
So you were never intrigued to see it until now?
No.
Okay.
No, we are now getting into the uncharted territory of the SNL movies for me. I have not seen...
You haven't seen any of the movies we're going to watch coming up?
I don't think I've seen any of the remaining movies all the way through.
Wow.
So this is going to be interesting. This is either going to be one of the best things we ever decided or one of the worst things we ever decided.
It'll either give you life or destroy you as a man.
Yeah. So you can watch my gradual unraveling throughout the rest of the summer.
Gradual that's a great name for an album. Gradual Unraveling.
Yeah,
I like that. If you want that, take it.
This will be a nice document of my
descent into madness.
Exactly.
It'll be like Colonel Kurtz in Apocalypse Now.
I'll be
by
like
the end of
scratching
it.
Things into the walls of the studio by the end of this.
So
next week, yeah. So please tune in next week, whereas we cover the Coneheads.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, you can track the show on Twitter at SNL Nerd Show.
Right.
And Darren, you have a Twitter account,
sure
don't you?
Sure do. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Darren Credible, D-A-R-I-N Credible.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Trumbull Comic.
Right.
And anything else we got to plug?
No, I think that's it.
All right, then please check us out on non-productive.com. Donate to our Patreon. Please leave nice reviews like those people just did who were on their layovers.
Uh-huh.
And leave us a 5-star review if you are so inclined.
Yes.
That helps out the show.
Yes.
We appreciate that, and we'll read it on air. We'll give you a little shout-out, and we'll mispronounce your name.
Yes, terribly.
Yeah. So I think that's about it.
All right. Party on, John.
Party on, Darren.
Woo!
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.